This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post. Next up, we have real estate mogul and CEO of Rostegar Property Company, Ari Rostegar. He's been called the king of Austin real estate, and his new book called The Gift of Failure will be released on September 27th. Coming up, I talked to Ari about growing up in an immigrant family in Austin, how he turned a $3,000 loan into a real estate empire, and why he believes everything that he's achieved was forged through failure. Up next, Ari Rostegar. Let's go.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
"Thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options."
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post. A show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. The People's Choice Podcast Awards listener nomination window is now open through July 31st. You can help me, the Renaissance Man, get on the final ballot by going right now. Do this right now. Podcastawards.com and nominating this show in three categories: Best Entertainment, Best Black Hosted, and Best Society / Culture categories. Make sure you represent. Download the podcast. Refer a friend. Refer a family member. Refer a coworker. Make sure you and they leave a 5-star rating, because this week's theme is really personal. It's called Failing Forward. We all experience failure in different forms, and learning from our failings is necessary for success. It's how we become better partners, better parents, better bosses, better people. But this kind of learning also means sitting uncomfortably with our own mistakes to try and better understand, how and why did that just happen? And trust me, that's never easy. Because facing failures, you know what that does? It requires us to face facts and experiences that can sometimes feel embarrassing or even shameful. So I ask you, when you look in the mirror, do you see your manager, your agent, your representative, or do you see reality? There's a reason why when you're sitting in a vehicle, the windshield is far superior in size than the rearview mirror. You know why? Because what's happening in front of you is vastly more important than what already took place. So again, remember that a setback or a failure isn't a reflection of who you are as an individual. As hard as it can be, accepting and understanding failure is an important life skill. One way to do that is pretty simple. Start discussing your mistakes. Doesn't matter if they're big or small. Have an honest conversation with someone you actually trust. You'll be making an environment, creating a space where failure can meet curiosity and not shame. Not only will your failings not seem as big as they were in your mind, but the lessons from them will be crystal clear to you. That's how you become stronger and wiser and ready to meet your success head on. My next guest knows all about being introspective, about his personal and professional life. Ari Rostegar is a successful real estate developer and business visionary who isn't afraid to talk about where he went wrong. He's the actual definition of the word self-made. Coming up, I talked to Ari about his humble beginnings that included working at multiple burger and pizza restaurants, what his biggest business flops taught him, and how becoming a parent gave him a new perspective on his work. Up next, Ari Rastegar. Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post, a show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. You may know my next guest as a real estate developer, the founder and CEO of Rastegar Property Company, and a leader of the next generation of real estate managers. Ari Rastegar grew up in Texas as an Iranian immigrant teen with a stutter. He started out working at burger and pizza joints. Now he's on track to be the youngest billionaire in real estate. It is my honor to welcome Ari Rastegar to the Renaissance Man podcast.
Jalen, when you say it, it sounds a lot cooler than when I say it in my head.
I appreciate you joining me. Thank you for taking the time. And you spoke publicly about how you started your company with $3,000 while you were in law school. What parts of your upbringing do you think gave you the tools to get you to where you are today?
Being hungrier than shit and getting kicked in the teeth every day. I mean, I don't know if that's the politically correct answer, but that's what it is. As you said, my dad was an Iranian immigrant. My mother is German. I was born here in Austin, Texas, which Austin has become, probably the hottest real estate market in the United States of America. It's not like I'm biased or anything, being one of the largest owners in the city, but I think the math kind of speaks to that. But I'm the kid that never was supposed to make it, man. Like, you know, and I think a lot of your listeners and a lot of folks that you deal with can share that similar thing. Like, mm-hmm. I had to go to 7 years of speech therapy, as you insinuated, just to learn how to talk again. And with the stutter and a lisp. And what I want to know is, you know, what crazy person put an S in the word lisp? Like, were they trying to just like humiliate us just like to be like for sport? But anyways, man, like I'm not the smartest guy in the world by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, like Will Smith, said many years ago, they asked him, you know, how he became, you know, one of the highest paid celebrities in the world and this, that and the other. And he said, look, I'm not the best actor. I'm not the sexiest, this, that or the other. But if you and I get on a treadmill side by side, either you're getting off first or I'm going to die. And I've taken that work mentality because I had to go to, and a lot of people don't know this, is I had to go to 2 community colleges before I even got into Texas A&M. And I was an English major, graduated top of my class, couldn't afford to go to law school after delivering pizzas through Texas A&M, and then used my scholarship money and borrowed $3,000 to start the firm. And in the past, 6 years, 7 years since I started, we went from $3,000, let's say, give or take, to we have over $1 billion in production and hundreds of millions of dollars on balance sheet. And to say the least, we're not stopping because the opportunity is still there.
And I've said this time and time again, the only place success comes before work is in the dictionary.
My God.
And people will see you now and underestimate your journey to rise to being the youngest billionaire in real estate at age 39. So I have to ask you, take me back to where you were working at the burger spot.
I got you. I remember it like it was yesterday. And to dovetail on your point, my book that comes out, it pre-released about a week ago. And we had this is my shameless self-promotion that my publicist is making me doing. It's called The Gift of Failure. And I say that with the highest level of humility in that, I see all the glitz and the glam and the, you know, the Rolls Royces, and, you know, I've had my jet, had my stuff, and I trust me, it's the same cheeseburger, mm-hmm. you know, and I know one thing for certain is that the failures and the missteps and all the things that came along were imperative for me to get to wherever I was going. So even when I was, you know, flipping burgers at Johnny Rockets. So some of y'all might remember Johnny Rockets.
Yes.
You know, so I wore the little funny top hat and I'm singing Frank Sinatra to a ketchup bottle. And one day I flipped the thing up in the air, try to, you know, be all fancy and spread ketchup all over everybody sitting there in the stand. And the dry cleaning bill was more than like my weekly pay. But yeah. And then I worked at Double Dave's Pizza, Domino's Pizza, and, you know, throughout Texas A&M, just trying to put stuff together, man. And, the thing that I think people, they miss in a lot of ways. And I certainly did myself. And I wrote a whole book about this quite literally, is people oftentimes don't know where they're going, you know, and I was very blessed at a very young age to know where I was going. Okay. And so even without, and people say, oh, I don't have the resources, I don't have the money, I don't have this, I don't have that. That's all fine. But it's not about resources. It's about being more resourceful and knowing where you're going and knowing where you're after, no matter what modality you're in, no matter what business, no matter if you're an athlete, you're a business person, you're a father, you're a mother, any role, like you have to know your objective. It's like a GPS. Like if you could have the best car in the world, the best tires in the world, the best intentions in the world, and you're in New York and you're trying to drive to California, if you drive south, you ain't getting to California.
Correct.
You know, and so there's something to be said about that, like knowing what that is, at least to the best of your ability. And I tell people, like, they say, well, how am I going to do that? I'm like, well, how is none of your business. Mm-hmm. It's the what and the why. If you know what you want and why you want it, the how is going to reveal itself in the process. And I knew even flipping burgers, you know, whatever, I was going to flip the best damn burger ever made. I'll tell you right now, we can go toe to toe. And I still promise you, I probably make one of the best pizzas in America because that was my work. And no matter how big or small a job is, I treated it, you know, like it was the most important thing in the world because it was one stepping stone to that next level. And I always viewed it that way. And I've always thought that as one of the greater blessings that I've had is to know that deep inside that I'm supposed to do something that matters for other people, that I can actually serve, whether that was a waiter, whether that was a pizza guy, or whether that's creating, you know, great living, or the apartment buildings we're building, the master plan communities we're building, is all about that obsession with that end user and like how we can make things better, more affordable, more efficient, and take the me out of the equation and make it the, you know, cliched kind of we, so to speak.
So in the era of people ordering out and dining out so very much, working in pizza places, working in burger joints, tell me some of the deep, dirty secrets that people may or may not notice actually happening with their food.
Yeah, all I got to say is be nice to your waiter. you know, be nice to your waiter. And I'll tell you, it's actually a good philosophy for life. Like anything that's true is you can judge a human being by how they treat what appear to be the underlings. And I don't mean that in a point of superiority. Yes. Trust me. If a kid like me, like I said, can make it or do anything, I ain't better, bigger than nobody, you know. And even this suit that I'm wearing, like when you don't know much, you got to dress well because maybe they think you know more than you do. But at the end of the day, there's so much to be said about how you treat people. And what I've tried to do at Rastigar as a firm is marry the data analytics, the spreadsheet, the numbers, let's say maybe the cold part of what it means to be a business person with humanity, with the human element, with those things so that there's always a checks and balances between what might look like. I passed on deals that penciled phenomenally on paper, and I've done deals that looked on paper that didn't pencil as well as maybe the bank wanted to see, and we did really well. And you know, and the other ones, right, that looked like we were going to make a bunch of money didn't always turn out that way, so we didn't do them. So the point is, I hate when people say life is long.
It's not,
because you know, it's not. Like, it's short. No, we have time and we'll do this later and we'll get to that and being whatever. But in reality, during COVID, during the, you know, we started to see how precious and fragile life really is. And not just from a place of people passing, from even your, you know, your work friends and things of that nature that you meet with, you know, that were when we were working remotely. I think that was so traumatizing to a lot of people because we lost that tribal element that makes us humans, of collaborating and breaking bread and talking and interacting. And it's why I've been a huge proponent of people going back to the office. And Elon said the other day that basically, if you're not going to be back in the office, you're fired. And it was a very, very heavy-handed move, but all of these things play into each other. But how you treat people ultimately is a reflection of how you treat yourself. And I think that's the point. So if you're one of those people that's being rude to this guy, that guy, whatever it is, chances are your internal dialogue with yourself is also very polluted as well.
That's extremely important to me. Even when I was poor, being what I call a please and thank you kind of person, being the kind of person, as you were mentioning, that's nice to people, quote unquote, that can't do anything for them.
Beautiful.
And that trait is a life trait to me that puts you on the road towards success. And that's what you were saying about having the GPS. When that is out of kilter and you don't know how to treat people, I think that does affect your trajectory.
You nailed it. And in another way to put it, like, is true north. Like, you miss true north of whatever, you know, whatever that is, you know, for you. Because a big belief, and I talk about this in the book a little bit, and one of the tentative titles of the book when I wrote it was What I've Learned Thus Far. Is kind of like, is the way that I thought about it, like in my mind when I was putting it together. And that's exactly right, because people try to separate business or whatever their vocation is with life. And I think that's a huge mistake, because you are an extension of your business. You are an extension of, you know, who you are on and off the court. We've seen the athletes that have done it really well, you know, in support of their communities. We've seen the athletes that maybe could have done it better, right? You know, no judgment either way, it's each their own. But at the end of the day, it's you. Right. So whenever something had gone wrong in the business or it needed to improve or something of the sort, the first thing I do is I call my life coach, who I've had for over 11 years, you know, and I'm a big proponent of watching, you know, success leaves clues. Right. So does failure. So if you look at the most successful performers in the world, they all got coaches. That doesn't mean that Phil Jackson or Tim Grover could have guarded Jordan or Kobe, but they damn sure had someone that could have pointed out what those things are, you know, in order to have them improve. And so this is one of the big ones, is whenever things had gone a different direction, I've always put it on me in almost a very unreasonable way, maybe to most people's mentality. But I look to say, what could I have done better? How can I make this, like, what could I do? How can I change? What's, you know, and the more that I've done that, which is painful, and sucks, quite quite frankly, because you have to look at your whole self. And a lot of times what you see in the mirror, you don't like.
Correct.
But with that said, you know, Ralph Waldo Emerson in his, you know, famous essay, Self-Reliance, which I urge everybody to read. And if you were going to read my book or read that, for the love of God, read Self-Reliance and do not read my book. but written by the master himself. But he talks about that concept, that self-reliance. And that doesn't mean, you know, that, you know, business and life isn't team sports, because, you know, it's not tennis, it's basketball. Like, everybody has to play a position, and we're out here to win rings. We're not out here to stat stuff, right?
Right.
So, and so that's the main takeaway, is you are that extension. You are your business. You want an empire? Build yourself into an empire. You want a big business? You want to be rich? Solve a big problem. You solve a big problem for somebody, you're going to see big dollars.
That that inspiration and that reality is like you were describing, is when you look in the mirror, do you see yourself or your representative?
Beautiful.
And when you start to be able to unpack that, that puts you in position to allow your goals to actually happen. You know, but I also have to ask you this. You're an expert at what you do. So many times people get discouraged because they don't have what's considered money to make their goals happen, right? So if you were going to advise somebody that wanted to start off in real estate, whether it's a house that's $50,000, a house that's $150,000, or anything in real estate, what would you advise somebody that's trying to start small and hope to build themselves a real estate empire?
Yeah, it's a fabulous question. And what I've come to learn is that sometimes questions are the answer. You want the right answer, ask the right question. And I talk about it a little bit in the book. But ultimately, it comes down to, again, there's a great quote that I'm going to butcher, okay? But you'll get the point. People dramatically overestimate what they can accomplish in 5 years.
Mm.
But they dramatically underestimate what they can do in 10.
Mm.
What I mean is, you know where I'm going, is you got to extend the timeline. This ain't no overnight. Like, you need to commit yourself to a craft, to a process. Mm-hmm. If this was sports, that's hitting the free throws, hitting the double. Mm-hmm. Every day, be in the gym. Every day, be in the gym. It's not always game time where you're trying to. You have to take the money element out of it. You have to learn the craft, okay? And be more patient than you think you can, that you think you should be. And that's the big honest. So they look at my career, like you said, they asked Messi, you know, when he first started, you know, winning big awards, like, you know, how does it feel to be an overnight success? And he was like, well, it only took me 17 years and 114 days to become an overnight success. Right. And so I look at where I am in my life from a kid that came from, you know, that shouldn't have made it for a variety of different reasons. You know, I do work inhumane hours, as anybody that knows me will tell you that. And Picasso used to say that luck is real, but it has to find you working, you know, when it actually, you know, which is a bar. It's real, right?
That's real.
It's real. It's gotta find you working, but it is there. But, you know, to answer your question about the real estate empire, is there's a lot of ways to skin the proverbial cat. Okay. If it was me at this point, I would go and I would get my real estate license. I just get my real estate license. It's never bad to have a license. Have a license for something. My father always used to say that. Have a license. Mm-hmm. Then find yourself a job at a spot. Maybe it's part-time at the beginning. Don't quit your damn day job. Mm-hmm. And that means managing downside risk, because the difference between an investor and a gambler is how much you understand the downside. Mm-hmm. And as an investment manager, the first job is to not lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go in with the attitude of potentially losing your job to try to do this other thing, you get reckless.
Correct.
So you need to manage that downside as well. So that means maybe it's night school. Maybe it's taking lessons at night. Maybe it's part-time being a real estate agent. You make that first sale and then you're able to quit that job. But the point is, you need to be around. Proximity is power. Mm. Proximity is power. And now more than ever, with social media, with, you know, YouTube, you don't know how often I watch free videos on YouTube.
Mm.
I'm talking about for Excel spreadsheet modeling. If I'm in the middle of a model and I'm looking at something and one of my really smart analysts had showed me something and I don't entirely get it, I got no ego in this. I'll get on YouTube. I'm going to watch that thing. I'm going to pull up a little thing, $20 I can do it, or watch a free class. MIT has free classes on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Watch the damn thing. So does Yale. So does Harvard. So you're literally, so is it about, you want like a degree, like you want, or is this cap, or is this like for education? Like, do you want to look rich or do you want to be rich?
That's well said. And the thing I appreciate about your book, and congratulations, The Gift of Failure, is you stress that you're not just focused on the things you did right, but what you did wrong. Tell me the moments in your career where you felt like this was a bad choice, this was a bad investment, so that those that are watching and listening to this show won't make the same mistakes.
No, they're all in there. I mean, at the beginning of the book, I go into, you know, one of my hauntings, as I call it, is I started a global entertainment company with a group and one in particular of the most powerful real estate people on the planet, okay, out of New York. And we signed the Black Eyed Peas, Diddy, during the Super Bowl when it was in Dallas. I mean, we had David Guetta, Diplo. I mean, you name it. We were locked in. We were a startup company, quote unquote. We had Facebook as a sponsor, Nivea for men. I mean, we, Sports Illustrated, we knocked the cover off the ball. Then the biggest ice storm in the history of Dallas, Texas hit. And then chargebacks happened. People didn't show up. Flights were canceled. I had another event for NBA All-Star Weekend that was in Los Angeles that year in 2011, which you probably remember. It was supposed to be at the Playboy Mansion before we found out all this crazy stuff about, I don't even want to get into it, but crazy, scary shit going on over there that thank God we didn't do it. I'm watching the news. Okay, we're going to do Playboy Mansion at the time, as you know, was the preeminent spot, like hottest party spot, whatever. I'm watching the news 48 hours before the event. Legionnaire's disease breaks out at the Playboy Mansion. It is permanently closed after I had an ice storm in Dallas. That basically So I woke, I went to sleep in Dallas, a multimillionaire, and woke up broke. And then thought that LA was going to be my redemption the following week. And they canceled the thing at the Playboy, had to switch it to another event. We had, it was Nate Dogg. We heard it was Nate Dogg's last show. Trey Songz performed, Fabolous performed, Snoop performed. We live streamed to MySpace, which I'm showing my age here, by the way. That was a big deal.
I had a MySpace page.
You know what I'm saying? And so from a profitability standpoint, it didn't work. And so a lot of, you know, my mentors and people are like, well, Ari, well, that wasn't your fault. I mean, an ice storm, Legionnaire's disease, that has nothing to do with you. And I saw it completely differently. What it taught me was I need to plan for the unexpected. And so every deal that I've ever done since then, you know, I stress test or I do what they call sensitivity analysis, which is basically a fancy way of saying you think it's going to be here, plan for it to be here. And if you're right, you don't have to plan for good news.
Correct.
And so keep more capital reserves. So during COVID, I closed 16 major deals during COVID while everybody was scared to death sitting on their couch, just going gangbusters because of the lesson that I learned. And the point is, it's not the failure. It's the honest introspection into the failure to pull out the lesson to then use later on in your life.
Totally makes sense. And I must acknowledge, too, because beyond your business success, you're raising a beautiful family with your wife, Kelly. Congratulations. How did becoming a father of three change your approach to work?
Changed everything. Everything. Everything used to be about Ari. Ari's time. Ari getting rich. Ari making Ari. When Victoria, our first, was born, I literally sobbed my eyes out thinking, I can't even take care of myself. Like, what am I going to do? I have this little human I'm holding in my hand and my health wasn't right. It's in the book. I wasn't feeling good. I was working crazy. Like, and everything then became about them. And I started to realize, okay, when I was 10 years old, we were basically on government help. We didn't have any money. So, okay, when Victoria turns 10, that's 10 years from now. Okay, when Isabella, who's 2, she turns 15. Okay, when Kingston, he turns. Like, so everything became this longer timeline for Ari. And once I extended that timeline, it was, and then took me out of the equation of just what's about Ari, Jalen, it was magic. I'm telling you. Like, it was almost like Moses parted the Red Sea. The universe opened up. It was like a video game up-leveling where it was like, okay, maybe the kid is starting to figure out that, you know, he's not supposed to be an arrogant fuck and, you know, actually do things to serve, and which has become the ethos of Mastercard, which is that servitude. And I don't mean that in a cheesy way to where we're looking to create better systems, better cost analysis, better end user, you know, systems and efficiencies, technology, but with the sole purpose to actually help and not like really like the pitch sounds good, but actually doing it.
And that commitment, like you mentioned, like reinvesting in yourself and then doubling down and reinvesting in your family, like you said, if it parts the Red Sea, it gives
you a sense of relief that you're doing your best, but you're not just only doing it for you. But I have to ask you something. What is it like as a parent when you think about your childhood and your upbringing and you see your children who get to be exposed to the best and the brightest things in life?
You're killing
me. Talk to me about that balance.
First of all, the word balance doesn't work. I call it seesawing.
Seesaw.
So you have to seesaw.
Okay.
So I have to seesaw one direction here and go fully focused in dad mode. Yes. And then I got to seesaw over here because multitasking is the biggest lie ever told to humanity. There is nothing more inefficient than multitasking. So I seesaw. That's my thing. And so one thing that I had to accept is there's one thing that I cannot teach my children. Hunger.
Correct.
Because they're not hungry.
Correct.
They eat. They're full.
Correct. Correct.
Do they have offices in my office. So every day after school, they have their desk, they do their stuff. Trust me, they know dad's working. They get it. And when I'm on the phone, they understand it. They respect it. They know where we came from. They're beautifully gracious children. And, you know, their mother has done an extraordinary job in all those ways. God knows I'm in the office. Probably more than I should be in that regard. And I've missed a lot of precious moments that if I talk about too much, we probably have to end this call. But with that said, I know I can't teach them to be hungry, but can I show them? Because kids don't do what you tell them. They do what they see.
Yes, correct.
They don't do what you tell them. They do what they see. So I had to make a decision that I had to show them that, yes, we've been very blessed to have these things, you call it a nice house and good cars and all the things that, you know, we didn't have. But they also see that I'm up at 5 o'clock every single morning. They see I take my vitamins every day. They see I'm in the gym every day. They see me putting in 12, 15 hour work days, no matter what. And so my hope and my prayer is that some of that rubs off.
It definitely will. And I'm gracious that you've taken the time to join me, Ari. But before you get out of here, I have a rapid fire segment called Gone in 60 Seconds. You ready to do
this?
Let's
fucking go.
Let's get it. What is your go-to restaurant in Austin?
Go-to Soho House in Austin. The new Soho House opened up here in Austin. It's dope. And I also love Jeffrey's. Jeffrey's and Soho House are probably my two go-to spots.
Got to get there to check that. What's the biggest myth in real estate that you're always coming across?
That flipping anything is a business? If I hear one more fix and flip thing, either I'm going to have to go buy the network and shut it down, or I'm just going to break the TV proverbial. I'm not a violent person, but if I was, I would probably break the TV.
Please, I have to drill down on this one because I see and hear that the way you do it on commercials and people talking about, can you describe why the term flipping houses is not positive?
Because it's called gambling. It's roulette. It takes time to season assets. Otherwise, you're gambling. By the way, here's another thing. Just because you made money on a deal does not make it right. Just because it worked doesn't make it right. I've done deals I made a bunch of money on, and I looked back on thinking, oh my God, luck got us out of this, not sharpening our pencils. So people have flipped houses, bought them, and they're in these up and growing markets, but that's gambling. So just because you won at roulette in Vegas doesn't make you an expert statistician that cracked the code.
That needed to be acknowledged. Also, your producer in 2020, you produced a documentary about an undocumented Guatemalan teen in New York City.
Who's from the same town that my mother-in-law, Kelly's wife, Kelly's mother was born in. So there was a very particular emotional relationship there. And we sweep the awards, crushed it. The team did absolutely incredible. The film is breathtaking. And, you know, I've produced a couple documentaries. You know, if you look at my IMDb, we debuted one at Cannes about the AIDS epidemic in Thailand and rehabilitating those sex workers that have been sold into it and how they were basically rehabilitated absolutely heartbreaking. And when this one came across our desk, you know, Kelly and I had to jump on it because it was so relevant to, you know, to the American dream, so to speak, that we've been so fortunate enough to be able to be a part of. But yeah, it was 5 years North was very, very, very special.
Ari, you're an inspiration. I'm looking forward to breaking bread with you at the Soho House in Austin.
Let's go.
Of failure. Make sure you go cop it, read it, and learn from it. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining the Renaissance, man.
Let's go. God bless you, brother.
God bless.
Last call.
I'd like to thank Ari for stopping by the podcast. I truly admire how he can be so radically honest about his professional failures. So honest that he's actually going to share them in the book that should be released on September 27th. One thing that stuck out to me about Ari is his commitment to his craft, regardless of what it was. Working at a pizza joint, working at a burger spot. Because what people don't talk enough about is how much patience that actually involves. Honing your skills does not, will not happen overnight. I hate to break it to you. You have to have a 10-year plan, a 5-year plan, a 3-year plan, a 2-week plan, a today plan. I love how Ari shared his favorite quote by Picasso. Luck is real. It just has to find you working. Ari became the king of Austin real estate not because he sat around waiting for success to find him. He set goals and understood exactly what he wanted. So I have to ask a personal question. Where will you be and what will you be doing when luck shows up? How are you now challenging yourself to be better? Is it your next professional degree? Is it learning how to make a free throw in sports? Whatever it is, remember that you're planting the seeds of greatness. Give them time to grow. Says the rose that grew from concrete. I'm the Renaissance Man. See you next week.